Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Charlie was just so focused. Over that first maybe 6 months, his mentality just changed and was like, I'm doing this, I'm going to make this happen. And then obviously a year and a half later, we saw what happened on Sunday.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Today we're taking a spin around Dublin in Renault's powerful new hybrid SUV, the Austral. With up to 80% electric driving in the city and a range of around 1,100 kilometres, the Austral excels both in urban environments and on long cross-country journeys. We're delighted to be joined today by Irish rugby great Gordon Darcy. With 82 Ireland caps to his name, he's more than qualified to give us his take on the current state of Irish rugby. Welcome to Backseat Pundits.
Some people are slightly concerned going into the Six Nations, I suppose, with the form of England and France in this autumn window. Where do you stand?
South Africa, New Zealand, England, France. I think they have moved ahead of us from a player development perspective. I think they have players, much more of a throughput of players, which is just one of the... it's just a reality of the Irish system. We have four professional teams.
Yeah.
England have 10 teams and just a bigger... Yeah, so we're behind them from a player... like throughput coming through. Like, you look at our tight... five. You look at our six front rowers, we only had one new face. South Africa had five. So, you know, that kind of their ability to bring new players through, and it's not giving players giving them a cap or testing them, or, you know, let's see if they're any good. These guys are earning their place just because natural competition, healthy competition coming through, and they get the benefit of being able to pick players. So coming back to Ireland, I think it showed how threadbare, this November series showed how threadbare we are. You know, two injuries to Jamie Osborne and to Stu McCluskey, and we were very, very light in the centre.
Yeah.
Back three, again, threadbare. Halfbacks, nobody has jumped into that where Conor Murray was.
Yeah.
And again, you know, we just don't have that throughput of players. So I think we've fallen behind those four teams from that perspective, but yet we're still getting results and we are competitive. So that's a really, really good place to be. The Six Nations is it's a really funny one. So now we have the two hardest games that we typically have away from home, where we are probably not going to have too many new faces going in, breaking in. And we kind of caveat that by, unless they start breaking in at the club, at the provincial level, which is what we need to see. So maybe a few new faces start breaking through into the four provinces and they force Andy Farrell's hand. We know he will do that. But we're likely to be more or less this group in the Six Nations, unless something massively changes.
How do you fix that? I know the onus is almost on the players themselves to put their hands up.
The onus is on the players. So you look at this and go, right, and this isn't me having a pop at Munster fans, but Gavin Coombs has been, why isn't Gavin Coombs getting more of a look in? Why is he getting more of a look in? Why is he getting more of a look in? And suddenly Gleeson arrives in and Gleeson's gone ahead of him. So Gleeson is a guy, and Igdagbu coming in as well. Those lads were picked and would have played this November series.
Yeah.
That's what players putting their hand up. This is what Tom Farrell does. So you have to change the game. You have to change. You get your... The only thing as a professional athlete you can control is the 80 minutes on a field. You play within a system, but when you have that ball in your hand, it's kick, pass, run. They're your decisions. You're either making really good decisions or you're not. And it has to be that existential balance between what's best for you and what's best for the team. Usually what's best for you is for best for the team.
Yeah.
Players need to force conversations, and if they don't, we don't have competition for places.
Yeah. You're part of probably one of the most famous partnerships in Irish rugby history, yourself and Brian O'Driscoll. That centre, the midfield right now is a bit more uncertain. I suppose you have Robbie Henshaw, who's still playing quite good rugby, but we know we can't hang on to him forever. Same with Bundiaki, similar to Ringrose eventually as well. McCluskey put his hand up this autumn window, but again, not on the right side of 30.
But I'm gutted for him, so I don't think he has enough. I don't think he has too many miles on the clock because he hasn't played. He's lost out selection-wise to the other lads that you were mentioning there, Gary Ringrose. I think he's quite a young 33-year-old.
Okay, yeah.
I think he can be a very big player for Ireland. And if we're just talking 2 years out from a World Cup, I think him fit, he offers something different, and he looks to have that, like, you know, the cliche of a bit between his teeth. He looks to be like a player who realizes that the amount of years he's playing professional rugby is on one hand,
yeah,
and he wants to maximize that as much as possible. So if Ireland can tap into that, if he can bring that type of intensity to all of his games, and he can bring that, he can add a different dynamic. Why? Just purely because he offloads the ball. And yeah, that is,
it's as simple as that.
It is as simple as that. Look at the most creative players in the Irish system all have something different. James Gibson-Park has passing game, that everybody, decision making. Sam Prendergast the same, but RG Snyman, look at what he does. It's his offloading game as well as being 6'9". Same with James Lowe, the offloading guy. Tom Farrell, these guys who keep the ball alive.
Yeah,
it creates that unpredictability in attack, and that's what can be your point of difference.
So do you think, as is, he's your starting 12 going into Six Nations, everyone fit if he's back?
It's very hard. I off the first game, the New Zealand game, I looked at how he played, and I just thought there was an edge to how he was playing, yeah, which I really liked. And also, I could remember in the last few years of my career, because I was just kind of like, I wanted no regrets. I was like, go as hard as you can for as long as you can. And when that happens, you have that positive resignation that I can't go on forever. So the opportunity I get, I have to maximize on. And if he plays, you know, fully fit from here, and he starts in Six Nations and goes right the way through to a World Cup,
yeah,
you know, that could be a great legacy for him to leave behind.
I think Ringrose in most people's books is still the number one, and rightly so, I would say. Do you think we have an issue behind him? I know Tom Farrell obviously made his debut during the autumn window. Do you think we're slightly short, though, in general, that position?
Well, I'd say Tom Farrell and they probably went to school together. So they're probably the same. Yeah. They're probably the same age. A young man to me, but they're probably the same age. So, yeah. Again, it goes back to that thing. Who's, like, in the other 13 jerseys for Connacht and for Ulster, who's forcing conversations there? Not too many people. So you have what you have. We can't just go to Pro D2 and bring up, players, find somebody that's been playing sevens or magical players. We have the players, we have four players in each position. And at the moment, there isn't much outside of that. And that sounds quite disparaging, and it's not. Two really high quality players. Like, Gary would have been starting a Lions test. You know, you don't become a bad player overnight.
Yeah.
And Tom Farrell has just been a guy, another, I put him in the same boat, very low mileage on the clock. And like, wasn't it just brilliant to see him play?
Class,
and even when he came on, he didn't, what I liked about Tom Farrell was he's playing the way he's playing, and he didn't shy away from keeping the ball alive, which has been his kind of USP for Munster since he's arrived there.
Andy Farrell, normally, and I would say still, he's a very calm and collected guy. We don't see too many emotions either way with him.
Yeah.
A couple of times during the autumn window, he did kind of hit out at journalists for kind of separate incidents or different questions. One was about Prendergast's physicality. The other was about Ireland's performance against the Springboks. Would you read into that at all? Or is that just, he's just feels a deep connection with his team and wants to defend them against those type of questions? Or,
I've no idea what his motivation would be, but I loved it.
Yeah.
Got to say, it's nice for a coach to come out and have your back.
That matters as a player, doesn't it?
Like, I think in sport, you're always finding a tenuous balance between what you say and what you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes words run through quite, you know, they're hollow. Whereas, you know, Andy Farrell backed up his players and stood up for them. And I like that. I got to say, I really, really like that. And he's kind of going, didn't like the attention that's been drawn out on Sam Prendergast. And he was just like, yeah, I'm not entertaining it. I'm happy with where he is. I'm giving him work-ons and doing. And yeah, I liked that, because it was very much as they're going, these are my players and I have a connection with them. And yeah, like, it's not like something that it would be, you know, you'd be walking in, clapping him into the team room or anything, going, hey!
Brandy, yeah.
But it's those little things. It goes back to the thing of that emotional intelligence. And it's not a conscious decision. That's just his character and his personality.
Prendergast. So I think Andy Farrell spoke a few weeks ago about his defensive qualities, and that he's willing to overlook certain work-ons when someone like him has bags of potential and is so good in other areas. Do you recount a player that was like that in your playing days? That maybe had, not so much a glaring issue, but had an issue in their game, but had so much potential that everyone else was willing to work around that and let him work on it?
I think you had players, I think what Andy Farrell is talking about there is strengths and weaknesses. I wouldn't say every 10 I've played with has been a brilliant defender or tackler. But they bring something else to the table that nobody else has. So you find a way to cope with it. I think with a player that's like so young, it's about getting time with them in that jersey and getting confidence as well, because like he has to get some time in the firing line and has to get comfortable with it. And it is a mindset shift for him. And it's kind of going, okay, well, his whole game has been built around attack for so many years. But if you want to be a top professional and have long longevity in the game, he's going to have to develop the physical side of his game. And, you know, we've asked and, you know, he's gotten it. The unfortunate bit, the reality is he's set a very good bar for himself, a very good standard from the last game. A couple of one-on-one misses, but you'll take that because you got the commitment elsewhere, and that has to be the starting point for him to keep going.
There's kind of an ongoing discussion about Ireland's lack of X-factor players. Do you look into that much? Because I think we do have one or two guys like a Mac Hansen. He's a guy who can make something out of nothing really.
Yeah.
But when we do look at other nations, it's never a fair comparison with the playing pools of France and England and South Africa, New Zealand. We don't have that kind of manpower, to put it that way. But do you think it's a concern?
I think it's a huge concern.
I
think it's the biggest problem we have in how we create underage rugby players. So the most creative players, I'm going to take Jack Crowley and Sam Prendergast out of this, the most creative players in our team at the moment are, and this isn't a veiled dig either, Mac Hansen, James Lowe, Jevonson, Gibson Park and Pundy, and they have not come through the Irish system. And I love them as players. I think they're as Irish as we are. They've done the hard yards. They're in here. They shouldn't be playing for Ireland conversation. This is it. They have a skill set that we don't develop here. And why do we not develop it? Most of the players come through the school system. In the school system, we perpetuate what's a system-based attack structure and defence structure. So it's all structure, structure, structure. There's very little creativity, very little ingenuity, very little thinking off the cuff. So players think for systems rather than what could I do here?
There's kind of, so like, that's
pretty
obviously...
Blessing,
isn't it? Yeah, it is. But it's also...
we're still fourth in the world.
It's so gotten us quite far.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the thing.
We do with one hand tied behind our back.
Exactly, yeah. And like people, I'm probably guilty of it as well.
Sorry, Jamie Osborne is another one. So Jamie Osborne, but the key with Jamie Osborne is he's come through the system. He's come through the club system. So he had a brilliant coach in Nace, Gavin Coombs, I think, as well. I think he came through Clonakilty. There was some coach down there. I think he might have been French. Could have that completely wrong. But these guys are given a different way of thinking, a bit of a way challenging on how they think about rugby.
Yeah, and I think one guy coming through as well, Casper Gabriel, who we know is from Austria, actually, and he'll have experience with Carlos Spencer now over in Terran Euros. That's pretty exciting. But it's kind of a weird thing where, like, obviously it's gotten us this far, that system-based kind of attack at rugby. But we'd also love to see some players like that coming through that can just kind of get the crowd up on their feet, get people excited to come to games.
Nitpicking. So this is what we do. We nitpick about Irish rugby. Irish rugby's in incredible health. I just use this through the lens of, if we did this slightly better, how good could we be?
Yeah.
So we don't have an academy system in Ireland. We have academies at 19 years of age, 18, 19 years of age, where players go into, but they come through the school system. We don't develop players till 19. At 19, we try and refine players. I think that's the crucial difference here.
Yeah.
So they all are trying to win a senior cup or trying to play schools cup rugby. And for most players, that's the high point of their of their career. And schools rugby is just feverish. It's incredible. It's like, just, you know, the Aviva, my, you know, brilliant memories from the old Lands End Road there. So unless we change how we actually coach younger kids, less structures, give them the tools to play the game, to problem solve, to think about it, that's when you have to go, well, okay, well, I've got a 3-on-3 here. How do I get the ball? How do I win this scenario? Yeah. You can't structure that.
I talk about you just for a second. You're often labelled as Mr. Consistent.
He's like, I nearly lost my career or whatever at 19, 20. So when I did eventually get back in, so I had 4 years from 20 to 24 where I was playing for Leinster, becoming consistent, and then through an injury to Brian, got into play at 13, having been a very average winger up until that point.
Okay.
So a bit of luck, a bit of serendipity, and very ready to move into that. So once I went in there, I left all the noise out there. Right. I kind of had been on the outside of things, so I never really got, you know, people sometimes said nice things, majority said not nice things.
Yeah.
So I always just tried to be a good professional and then go home and leave rugby at the door.
As you kind of gained notoriety as your career went on, did you find that harder and harder to do to kind of block out the noise, or because you were doing it from such
a... Not really. I had a really good, like, the people I was friends with in rugby, and then I was very lucky to have a group of friends from school that were very grounding.
Okay.
You know, so I played a lot of my, like, people who were like my really good friends from rugby when I kicked on, they were probably retiring. So because I was quite young when I came in, and I came into a group that was quite old, so a lot of my friends are, you know, celebrating 50s and 55ths and stuff.
Right.
And then, as I said, I had a really good group of friends from school who were very grounding. So they're the guys like I spent all my time in boarding school with, and knew them inside out. They knew me inside out, and they didn't care that I was a professional rugby player. They were, you know, we grew up with the same social anxieties and you know, chasing girls and, you know, a couple of drinks when we shouldn't have been and things. So they didn't really care that I played rugby. So that was always a really good grounding thing for me.
Yeah. It's quite interesting though, because we had Devin Toner do the first episode of Backseat Pundits, and he, you know, he kind of talked about reading player ratings even after a loss, or even when he won, and he wanted to see that other people thought think he played well as well. You were never that type of guy that really cared for that type of thing.
Ah, you knew the moment you came off the field, whether you were an 8 or a 9, or you were a 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Or a 1. I got a 1 once.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. But the reason why I knew I got a 1 was because those really nice friends I had from school, every one of them were WhatsApping them to me.
But what did you do?
I think I played against England. I had a shocker.
A 1 seems fairly harsh, though. Jeez. Okay.
For me, you know, when you've done a good job. Vinnie Murray was my coach in school, and I think he had a brilliant phrase for it. It's like, when you can look yourself in the eye after a game. Sorry, what I mean, in look yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
And you look yourself in the mirror after a game, and you know you've done everything you can. And that, I think, is important, because if you try to judge yourself by other people's, you know, metrics, and if you not even metrics, if you try to appease everybody, you please nobody. So be confident. I was just got to a place where I was like, going, okay, I'm happy, I'm doing as much as I possibly can here, and probably a bit more. I know my teammates respect me, I know I'm doing everything I can be. So really, does that number, is that going to make or break me?
Yeah.
So I don't need it. You look sometimes, but, you know, did it ever land? Not really.
Okay. Are you a player now that you look back on your career and you'd be proud? Are you content with what you did on the field?
Yeah, it's probably taken me a while to get there. It's a great question, because I see so many players who finish playing rugby and they haven't finished with the game.
Yeah.
I suppose what do I mean by that? They feel the game owes them something, or it didn't end right, or they have a want, they have something in the game that will always be with them, they'll never be happy with it. So I played 19 seasons, I think, you know, to started in July of 1998, and went to the September 2015. And when I finished, I couldn't play the game. I was done. The body couldn't do what I wanted. It understood it, understood the game mentally, tactically, what I needed to be able to do in it, but I couldn't actually play the game. My body had checked out. Very, quite cruel irony of it. Finally understood the game, my body couldn't do it. But no, like, I, when I finished, and
no regrets or anything like that.
No, not really. Like, and I, excuse my language now, I fucked up loads of things along my career, made really bad decisions. But each one of those, because I worked with Enda McNulty a lot, and he was like, whenever, like, when these bad things had happened and I was carrying them like a weight around my neck, and he'd be like, can you time travel? I'd be like, no. And he's like, why? So you can't go back and change that.
What's the point?
Accept it, move on. And he's like, oh, he was quite cathartic, and I was like, going, oh, okay. So I've kind of, you know, did I have the perfect career? Absolutely not. Did I have the career from that I got the best out of my career? I think so. Yeah, it's things I'm proud of. Being written off a couple of times, coming back, having to fight for my position. Every coach I've played under has tried to drop me at some point. I've had to, you know, I've had to come back. I've had to fight for my place, and I've had to evolve as a player constantly. So yeah, I look back at my career now, and you know, each one of my kids has, you know, they've got a medal and they've got a cap and they've got a jersey in their room. And that's kind of all the rugby memorabilia I have in the house. They're not there by choice, but my wife is, it's important that they know that's was such a big part of your life. And yeah, so I am quite proud of it now. Yeah.
So Gordon, you played here for a couple of years.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Unbelievable. Like, this is the stadium, I suppose. All the big moments nearly in Ireland come through here, bar maybe the match and a couple of matches in Croke Park. Everything was here. Schoolboy rugby, winning the senior here with Longos. Playing, you know, here with Leinster, playing here with Ireland, playing the last game before the old Land's End Road. Into the new stadium, as Shane Horgan like to call it, the newly refurbished Land's End Road, then the Aviva. And like, my last game of rugby was here.
Yeah.
Is, you know, which is a nice end to a career. And it was my 3-month-old's daughter. It was her first.
Right.
First match and my last.
It's last. What was that like?
Well, not great. Because shortly afterwards, I got a phone call from Joe Schmidt. So the squad was being announced on, I think, Tuesday morning.
It was a warm-up game.
Warm-up game in Scotland. And so my phone rang on a, I think, Sunday evening or Monday morning, and I knew that wasn't...
You knew straight away.
Well, if the coach is ringing you, it's generally not to tell you you're in. I knew I'd squeezed every ounce out of my career at that point. I was hoping to go. I was going on hope more so than anything else. In 6 months, I'd just gotten old. And, you know, as Joe was, he just said... rang me up and had a very quick chat with him. I knew it, he knew it. So it wasn't fine. It was very few players get to pick the end of their career.
And the Six Nations will be returning here soon.
Yeah.
How are we looking in your eyes? Are you confident? Are you nervous? There's been a lot of talk today even just, but over the last little while during the window, the autumn window, that some people aren't too confident in the team. What are your views?
I think New Zealand, South Africa, France and England have kicked on from a player perspective. They've got new players coming through. I think Scotland and Wales and Scotland have definitely regressed a little bit, and I think they're going backwards. Not backwards, but they haven't, they aren't in, as say, a good a place as Ireland. So I think in that lens, I think we're in a really, really good place. I think we've fallen behind a little bit from the top four. I think over the next 12 months we can easily close that gap a little bit, and I think we're always kind of comfortable in that top three, top four teams.
Thanks so much, Gordon, for coming to chat to us today. Appreciate it.
Sure. Cheers, dude.
Tune in to Off The Ball for all your rugby coverage. A massive thanks to Renault for sponsoring this series, and check out their new series of hybrid powered train vehicles, the Austral, the Captor and the Symbios.